Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host and founder of Product Innovation Educators, online training for new and experienced product managers, where I turn product managers into product masters. To get the notes of the discussion, go to theeverydayinnovator.com/052. Wow, 052. That means this marks the 1 year of the Everyday Innovator podcast, 52 episodes once a week. And I could not have a better guest and a more important topic for us, a skill that is at the core of product management and innovation. What is it? I'm glad you asked. Great product managers must interact with people across the organization and possess the ability to influence stakeholders at all levels, including the very top of the company. Further, they are skilled in developing rapport with customers to gain deep insights into their problems and what they value. As you know, all of this requires effective communication, and learning how to communicate both effectively and efficiently is what my guests, Curtis Fletcher, and I discuss. Curtis has been a product manager at Oracle, a customer experience expert for several organizations, a CTO, and has also served in other leadership roles. Today, he coaches executives and their management teams to be more effective communicators and presenters. I met Curtis at the SCORE conference, that's S-C-O-R-R-E, which is all about becoming a better speaker. He was my coach for the 3-day experience. Improving my speaking was on my personal development list this year because I want this podcast to offer you even more value, which means I need to become a better communicator. There are a number of things I've done already. Andrew Warner, the founder of Mixergy, has a great course I took for interviewing people. Alex Bloomberg, the creator of the Startup Podcast, formerly the producer of This American Life at NPR, did a 2-day interview course that I found really insightful. But now it was time to work on my actual communication clarity. So off to SCORE I went, and I'm so glad I did. In this interview, Curtis and I discuss 3 parts of a simple framework that will help you focus your communications and be more effective. We recorded the interview in person at my office, and there's an occasional little background noise, but nothing too distracting. I hope you enjoy this very special 52nd episode. Curtis, thanks so much for being with the Everyday Innovators today.
My pleasure.
So you're probably the perfect person to be talking to product managers about how we can be better communicators, more efficient communicators in any form, right? Whether it's our writing, if it's doing presentations, doing speeches to people, talking to customers. Because you've been a product manager at Oracle, you've moved on to customer experience and helping companies with customer experience. A big part of what we do as product managers. You've been an executive. These days, one of your hats is to provide coaching to executives to be better communicators, both speaking and other communication methods also, right?
Absolutely.
And I met you at this SCORE conference a couple weeks ago, which was my personal activity this year, really to just learn to be a better communicator for this podcast. Was my main focus, was wanting to improve the quality of this podcast for everyone listening. And I wanted to work on my communication and doing that. And so listeners, don't expect any big changes yet. I'm still learning. But it was a great experience. And you've been with this conference that teaches people how to be better speakers for 22 years.
Yes.
Coaching the attendees there, which run the gamut from executives of organizations down to individuals that just have a message and they want to get better at sharing it with people, right?
Correct.
So give us a little bit of backdrop on what that SCORE conference is all about.
Well, it was originally created by a guy by the name of Ken Davis. Ken is an interesting character. He is a bit of an entrepreneur, a bit of a preacher, a bit of a motivational speaker, but primarily used to make his living as a stand-up comedian. Now, he would say he doesn't do stand-up. He tells stories. Mm-hmm. But Ken recognized that he had the ability to captivate an audience when he was speaking in front of them, and that there was something about the way he presented that he could potentially teach others. In the first time they ever did that, their thinking was, this is going to be more the dynamics of speaking. How do you become entertaining or engaging? And they threw in a little just piece of information about how to structure your talk, how to structure what you wanted to say. And they found out in that first pass that the attendees thought that the dynamics stuff was great, but that there was huge value in this notion of structuring your information such that it was easy for the audience to remember. Mm-hmm. And so they went out and did a little bit of research, and they found out that almost nobody in any audience could come back and succinctly tell you within a sentence or two what the speaker had wanted to communicate. And they found out even worse that only about 50% of the guys presenting, whether it was a keynote or a corporate meeting or a pastor giving a sermon on Sunday, could succinctly articulate within a sentence or two what the objective of their conversation was. Mm-hmm. And so SCORE was really born out of this notion of being able to communicate with more focus, greater clarity, and increased power. And it's been around now for close to 30 years. Well, just over 30 years, training hundreds of, and thousands of people, the SCORE method, and then how to apply that in their speaking scenario.
And I found it really valuable personally. So I came away with a lot of important lessons learned, but two I want to highlight. One was a lot of the speakers I talked to that were there said that they were probably better entertainers before the conference than they were after speakers, right? There were people that recognized after taking the conference and learning that people would come up to them after they gave their speeches and say, hey, I like you. That was great. You really enjoyed that. But they didn't have any key takeaway, right? And so the speakers that I talked to the conference recognized that this was really helping them focus their communication. And I'm sure I've done that too when I speak to groups. I always purposely try to design my speeches so that people are leaving with something new that they didn't know before. But it's going to be a lot more focused than it has been in the past, which is good. And the other takeaway was there's only two kinds of communication and two kinds of speeches. You're either trying to train someone how to do something, which is primarily what most of my speeches are, or you're trying to motivate them to take some action. You're trying to persuade them. And I think that is at first off-putting to people to hear. There's only two. So talk about your experience with this.
It's interesting on both of your points, right? If you look at any study on fear, more people fear public speaking than they do death. It always rates as a higher level fear. Mm-hmm. I think it's because when you get in front of an audience to speak, you are being very vulnerable. You are opening yourself up. There's a physical presence that you have, and so you're being evaluated physically. There's the information that you're sharing, which is also being evaluated. There's your presentation method and style, which is being evaluated. So it's high risk. And so SCORE is always kind of a bit of a grinder, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that Ken will say in the beginning is leave your guns at the door. Whatever you think is your shtick, leave it at the door. And then we get into that very question of there's only two types of presentation. Now, year after year, we'll make that claim. And someone invariably will start to shake their head that they believe there's something more. And if you get a brave attendee at the conference, they'll raise their hand and say, well, what if I'm just presenting information? Very simply, then you ask, why are you presenting the information? And invariably, they'll land on, well, I want people to. Great. Are you trying to train them or convince them? And so you end up back in these two. Right. Now, sometimes people will say, I'm trying to do both. And we can talk about that a little bit. But it's when you realize that I'm either trying to convince or train and that I have to make a choice, it really starts to shape your communication in a different way. I look at my kids who have come home from years of either camp or motivational speakers at school or even teachers in class. And you'll ask, how was it? How was the guy that came and spoke today? Without fail, they'll tell you, he told this great story, or he was ADHD and then, or he used to do drugs and now he. It's like they're giving you the description of a movie. It really is about the entertainment. Mm-hmm. They can't give you what did he want you to do,
right,
as you left. What was the purpose?
So the speaker did a good job capturing attention of the audience, but what was the next?
But they don't know what the purpose is. So the idea behind this notion that there's only two types of talk is to force you into what do I want my audience to do when they leave? And now I got to think entirely differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't, if I'm thinking, this is what I want to accomplish, this is what I want you to do when you leave, I'm not thinking about what opening joke am I going to use, right? I'm not thinking about, I have this really cool story I'm going to tell. And then people walk away remembering the story,
right?
But not what it meant.
Right. Not the key takeaway, but right. The action that we need. And this is really important, everyday innovators, that we're talking about this, because I work with product managers and people involved in innovation across the spectrum. Those that are new to product management to, you know, the chief innovation officers, the VPs responsible for innovation, and even CEOs at times. And the topic of communication cuts across all those levels, right? People would probably be surprised, I guess if you worked inside our organizations, you would know this, but how many senior level people are uncomfortable with when they have to give a public presentation, even to their employees, down to the new product manager that needs to go talk to customers, right? And how do we get that done? So let's give everyone listening some specific actions. We don't have time to cover all of SCORE, and SCORE is an acronym. It's SCORRE. And in the show notes for this, I'll put the link to the book that does explain the whole SCORE system. But the pieces I found most important to me, kind of from that product management perspective, where we typically have the subject already given to us,
sure,
is to focus on the O part, which is the objective statement. At least that's, I don't know if it's officially called the objective statement. That's what I remember.
Yep, that's what it's called.
And then the rationale,
mm-hmm,
to support that, and then the resources.
Yep.
So let's go through how to construct the objective statement.
So let's use the example you talked about, right? A product manager who either wants to present within his company about something that's going on in the product, maybe a new innovation, maybe a new market we want to look at cracking, or the executive that wants to do a similar presentation. Mm-hmm. What most of those people start from is, what do I want to talk about? And they start to gather all these data points that they have that I have to make sure I mention, or this study that we did that found out that. And so they think about, what do I want to talk about? What we say with the objective sentence is, don't start there. Start with, what do I want the audience to do when they go away? I want you to know. I want you to do. I want you to buy. I want you to go build. There is a very discrete verb somewhere in there that I want you to do.
It's all action oriented.
Yes. And so I'm starting my whole presentation from the standpoint of, what do I want them to do when they go away?
Right. And when you say you're starting your whole presentation, not that you start the presentation with that statement per se.
No.
But you're starting framing what you want to share in that presentation with this.
Yes. We can build the next generation widget. We should build the next generation widget. Mm-hmm. So that's a training talk or a persuading, convincing talk, right? And they become two totally different talks. Because if I start with, we can build the next generation widget, then the question is how? And now your whole talk's going to be about how we can,
right?
Effectively or efficiently or,
right.
But there's nothing in there about why we should.
And I think in my past experiences as a product manager, I've had meetings that were much less effective in what I was trying to accomplish, because I actually tried to do both at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe it's we have a brand new idea from a customer. This could extend our product line. It could be a new product. I'm going to get the group together of stakeholders that are relevant and persuade them why this is important. But at the same time, talk about how we can get it done. Right. And really, those are very two different objectives. And I first need to make sure I have the stakeholders on board. That's one meeting. Right. And that's a discussion with the stakeholders, yeah, we agree that really is important. And it's a separate meeting with them to talk about how we're going to get that done then.
Right. And one of the ways that I ask my students in the workshop to sort that out is, one of the analogies I've used lately is, okay, I'm going to put a balance scale in front of you, and you have five weights. On one side is, your audience needs to be convinced. On the other side is, they need to be trained how. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to put the five weights? And the reason I give you five is that you can't have two and two now if it was four, right? It can't be equal. So you're going to distribute the weights. And it's funny when you use that analogy that someone will argue to death that it's both. And then when I give them the analogy of the weights, they'll go 4-1, right? I want to put one on the convincing side and four on the training side. Mm-hmm. You've just told me what your presentation is going to be about.
What action you want people to take.
Yes, I'm going to train them how. Now, I may convince them in the introduction, but I'm not going to make my meeting 50-50. Mm-hmm. If I get a little more esoteric, the difference in my mind is, what does my audience really want to, what do they want to do? If they're not sure, and it's something that I want them to do, then I'm probably going to have to persuade them.
Right.
But if they already want to do it, if they already have a bent towards it, then I probably am going to train them. Mm-hmm. So I think about it as, do they want to do it already? If they do, I'm training. Or do I just really want them to do it and they need to be convinced? Then I'm persuading.
And I'll share an example from the conference.
Yeah.
So the score, the objective statement has a very specific context. Very specific syntax.
Yeah.
Which I found helpful to get me thinking in these terms, right? And I did not wrestle with any of the persuasive objective statements, you know, trying to motivate someone, because that's typically not what I'm doing. I'm typically training people how to do something. And so for one of those speeches, I did a talk outside my innovation space, which was on how to have good sound quality on your podcast. And so my objective statement was every person, so we in the objective statement, you identify who you're speaking to, who your audience is. That just says everyone, right? So every person can, so what I'm, you know, enabling them to do something, can have good sound quality on their podcast by following 5 simple steps, right? So I was laying out, I was thinking about what action do I want them to be able to take? Well, the action is they can have good sound quality. How do I get that done? Through 5 simple steps. And then, so my presentation was to just tell them you can do this, and here's the 5 simple steps. And I added some color to that to make it more engaging.
Yes, you did.
So Curtis was my coach for this activity. So I did something far outside of my bounds, which was I took on a character, and it was a theatrical event for me, which is something I don't do at all. It was a really good experience. So email me if you want to know about Podcast Sensei, who was the character for this. But that gave me clear focus on what I was trying to accomplish. I was trying to train them, and they were going to walk away knowing the five simple steps to have good audio quality. And so we call those five things in this case rationale.
Yes.
Right. So let's go on to the R, the first R in the score. What are the rationale that support an objective statement?
Right. So that's a great example, right? In this case, the rationale were the 5 steps to good sound quality in a podcast. Mm-hmm. So as I'm constructing the syntax of that objective sentence, let's just work with the enabling sentence, the training sentence, to follow on your example. It's every blank, and the first blank is my audience. So every person, or every person who wants to do a podcast, mm-hmm. can, always the word can. And then that second blank is the thing that I want them to do. Or in this case, because it's can, remember I said, I'm assuming they already want to do it. Mm-hmm. And this was true in our audience, in our small group. They all wanted to know how to have better sound quality. So every person can, the thing I want them to do or that they want to do, have better sound quality in a podcast, which leads you to ask the question, how? Mm-hmm. By taking the following 5 steps. Now, that means that each rationale is going to be a step. And in fact, there's going to be 5 of them. So I've just set up the guideline for the rest of my talk. The rationale are really what we usually think of as the points of a talk. So now we teach that word steps is a key word that make my rationale have to all be steps. And in fact, I would say if you're choosing steps, it's probably sequential. Mm-hmm. And so now each one of those rationale, each one of the points of my talk is going to be a step toward better sound quality that will result in better sound quality because you've made a promise in that objective sentence. And that it's going to be sequential, and that when I get to the end, I can go back over those 5 steps, and if I follow them, my podcast will have better sound quality. So you've set up a promise, and then the rationale deliver on the promise. The interesting thing about rationale is that many times we start there. Mm-hmm. So I have all the things, again, back to this notion of what I want to talk about. You probably, even in that talk, in your head, already knew what the 5 steps were, the 5 elements of good sound quality. You didn't have to go research that.
Right.
But you needed a package that was going to make them easy to remember and easy to follow. And that's what that objective sentence did. It took the knowledge that was already in your head and gave you a structure to lay them out, gave you the syntax, to use your word, that that laid them out in a logical format so that your audience could follow it. Mm-hmm. And it forced a roadmap on you when you chose steps to make those sequential, right? So if I think about product innovation and I want to go share, you know, the research we've gotten back from the customers or the market research or whatever it is that's driven us to a new product evolution, mm-hmm. I probably have those rationales somewhere in my head. And what tends to happen a lot of times, because of all we've talked about, people being nervous about public speaking, the setting being artificial, not sure what my objective is, wanting to make sure that people like me, which becomes an objective in and of itself, there tends to be very little structure in how I put together those elements, right? But if I tell you, you have to fit it into this format, and in fact, I tell you even more militantly, you've got to pick a word that describes every one of those points you want to talk about. In this example, it was steps. Mm-hmm. Other times it may be truths or elements or attributes or findings from market research. If I tell you you've got to find a word that encapsulates all those, it forces you to do a lot of work on just these few sentences before you ever get up to present. But it is exactly that work that causes your audience to be able to go away remembering what you wanted them to do.
Mm-hmm. The most valuable thing out of that experience for me was it makes the level of content coherent. And what I mean by that, so for example, Everyday Innovators, the day before I gave this other speech, which was on what are the three interviews to understand what your customer needs, right? And so I dove into this and I got through my preparation for this and realized that I could actually deliver on the promise I was making. The audience wasn't going to walk away being able to actually do what I was talking about, do all three interviews. There just wasn't time for that. It was too much information. And I refocused it to focus on one interview. And even that I did quite end up delivering on. And the issue for me, and I think I've done this as I reflect on the speeches I have given in the past, one of the big errors for me was they were at all different levels, right? The rationale I was sharing, the points I was sharing, they were at incoherent levels. So inside my head, I have a framework where they all make sense, right? But if I was going to lay out the rationale in a book, right, clearly there would be these elements that would be much bigger than would fit inside a chapter, right? And so if I'm giving a speech that was to highlight key points that you would think of would be together in a chapter, I was probably actually, you know, hitting on the introduction, hitting on chapters 3, 4, and 5, their main theme, you know, and then hitting on the content of chapter 7 and a little bit of 8.
Right.
And in my mind, they all make sense. But I liked when you talked about the objective statement makes a promise, and then you develop that with the rationale, and you go back and check to see, did I deliver on that promise? And that makes things so much more coherent to think about, do my rationale actually deliver on the key promise, or am I actually fulfilling a different objective and figure that out.
It sounds really simplistic when we just have the conversation about it. But when you actually sit down to do the work, just that one sentence, for me sometimes can even take the bulk of my preparation time.
Right.
Because once I get that sentence together, I have all the information in my head. As a product manager, we know our stuff, we hope, and we know our market. So it's not like I have to go find information. I have to find a structure. Mm-hmm. So this notion of my objective making a promise and then making sure that my rationale deliver on it is always fascinating to me. We were working with a company that sells a technically kind of complex water filtration system. I mean, big building, corporate level, sit on your roof kind of thing. That uses ionization and salt rather than toxic chemicals. Hmm. So we were working with their product people and their salespeople on creating some of their messaging. And one of the guys in the room was he's a chemical engineer, a chemical engineering background, so very smart guy. And this felt very simplistic to him. And he wanted to talk about, because we didn't let them do their first talk on their product. We wanted them to just get the structure. So he wanted to talk about team communication. Fairly simple topic. Felt like he had 3 or 4 good points on team communication. Mm-hmm. And he laid out his objective sentence. And he was being a little snarky with us probably too, if I'm being honest. So he laid out his objective sentence, something like, every team can learn how to communicate better by looking at these four examples from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
Now let's imagine that. Now structurally that works fine, but let's imagine the content of that talk. What's going to happen in that talk is you're going to show four clips, because that's what he had in mind, and you're going to speak to each of those four clips. Now, what probably happens as you run each clip is you're going to say, well, see, this shows teamwork and this shows collaboration and this shows. And then you're going to do the next clip and this shows leadership and see, it's collaboration again. And oh, by the way, it also. So what he realized when I pointed that out, I said, so now what's your whole talk going to be about? He said, communication. I said, no, it's not. Your whole talk is going to be about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the light bulb went on for him and he said, wow, this is harder than I thought. What he really needed to do was turn it over and say, what are the four elements of communication that you think are important to make a team successful? Every team can be successful in communicating by working on these four elements. Mm-hmm. That promise is a fail, because you're promising I can be effective by working on, I can be more effective, or I can increase my effectiveness by working on, is a much better promise that I can deliver on.
Right.
It's aligned. So you see how I'm already having to craft this sentence more carefully, which is a really good segue into rationale, which is the second R of score.
Resources.
Resources. Sorry. Resources, which is
the second R. I was a good student. I remember that much.
Nicely done. Resources is what I want to use to illustrate my point. Mm-hmm. Right. So it feels like that first talk, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles talk, was going to be far more creative, right? It's going to be far more interesting to show four clips. And so our danger, our enticement, is to go down the road of this more entertaining approach. It feels very cut and dry and kind of staid to go back to, these are four elements that will enhance your communication. Mm-hmm. It feels like almost like I'm giving you a recipe and it's boring. Mm-hmm. But what we say with resources is, now, okay, you've got these great Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle examples. We're going to bring those back now. Except that when we bring them back, I've got to make sure that each scene that I choose is an illustration of the one point that is that particular rationale, that is that particular piece of my talk.
Right.
I don't get to say, and it also shows, and it also shows. That's where the whole talk gets watered down.
Right. That's where people walk away being confused about what were the key points.
That's where they walk away going, it was a really interesting talk on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and how well they communicated as a team.
That was a great movie. I have to go see that.
Right. So you get to bring the creative pieces back, but you bring them back in structure. Mm-hmm. So if I've got a customer success story, I don't tell the customer success story and then try and pull out a couple elements from the story. I have a very discrete rationale under an objective, and I say, and this customer success story illustrates this step or this truth, whatever my keyword was that's packaging my rationale.
Right. And I think about the resources supporting the rationale to really make the speech more engaging, right? That you're illustrating the rationale, but we saw lots of examples at the conference that this was adding color, right? And at times maybe theatrical elements, but not in the sense of entertaining, but in the sense of I'm trying to capture the attention of my audience to help them remember the key points.
Right, right. Right.
So if there are five steps to better product, better podcast audio, I want to help them remember what those five steps are, right?
Yeah, and this is where, for me, if I'm speaking to a product management office or audience, it's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. Again, as a product manager, you should be the expert on your product. And I hope you're also an expert on your market. Mm-hmm. So at the intersection of those two, you know value proposition. You know direction. You know kind of futuristic vision of where we're moving with this product and the problem we're going to solve for the customer and the resultant business advantage for the customer, for example. You are then the expert. So if I start your talk from an objective, which is you can or you should, and the only thing that I've got to fill out the talk with is knowledge that you have intimately that is part of you, that is probably ingrained in who you are.
Right.
And then I turn you loose to say, you've structured it now. Now I'm going to turn you loose to say, throw all the examples at these very specific points. It can, once you learn how to do this, it can drive a whole different level of comfort in your presentation. Mm-hmm. Because you now know I'm not up here to try and make them like me. I'm not up here to try and be entertaining or to be better than the guy that spoke before me. I'm up here to train them how to do something, and I've got some really good examples and some really good stories and some jokes that apply, and they're not throwaway, mm-hmm. right? Too often I see people start with a joke that has no connection to what they're supposed to be talking about, and they get a kind of a, I'll call it a polite golf chuckle from the audience.
It's the warm-up.
Yeah. You get the polite golf chuckle, and it actually makes you more nervous because you were hoping that they were going to really crack up. And the audience is wondering why you're telling this joke. But now, if that joke all of a sudden really does support one of the points in your conversation, mm-hmm. you'll get a much different reaction.
Now it becomes a good illustration.
Yes. Even if you tell it the same way, even if you're a horrible joke teller, if the audience knows why it's there, the reaction will be far better. And that will drive your confidence in the talk as well.
Right. So to support the rationale, the resources can be these illustrations, the stories. We might pull in some stats.
It could be data of any kind, yeah. right?
Notable quotes that support the key points. But they're the things that enrich the speech that support the key points that you want to convey, so people walk out actually remembering those.
Yeah, absolutely. The phrase we use in the conference is it brings light, color, and clarity to the truth. So it, you know, if most of the product managers that I have worked with have been analogy people, right? Mm-hmm. When we start to try and paint a picture, we'll say, well, it's kind of like, and we'll go into analogy. That right there, that analogy is a resource.
Right.
That is an illustration that supports your rationale.
And earlier you alluded that once you get good at scoring your speech, scoring the content you need to present, this can actually become really quick, right? That as the product manager, as the innovator, you already have so much of that knowledge in your head, and you just need to be more effective at communicating it. And you can, even in an elevator ride, come up with an objective statement in your head, figure out the key rationale you're going to share, and be ready for an impromptu discussion just by knowing this framework.
Yeah, one of the students we had years ago talked about getting this into his DNA. And having done it for 20 plus years now, I feel like it's pretty ingrained in how I mm-hmm. think. But that notion of the objective sentence, every person can do whatever it is by taking these steps and just following that example. Every person can have better sound quality in their podcast by following these 5 steps. That one sentence becomes your elevator pitch. And now I can give you in a 5-minute talk those 5 examples, those 5 steps. And then in a half an hour or an hour presentation, I can bring you stories of illustrating those 5 steps mm-hmm. and making it more of an emotional connection to my audience. I go back to this notion that a product manager is both the expert in their product and an expert in their market, mm-hmm. Expert in their current customers and potential future customers. So you don't have to think about what to say. You really have to think about what not to say. You really have to have a mechanism that focuses you.
Right.
And that's what this does. It allows you to take out the stuff that is equally as important in the full scope of life, but isn't as important in this conversation.
Right.
And lets you narrow it down to something your audience can walk away with. Because if you as a product manager, in one presentation could tell me everything I needed to know about your product or everything I needed to know about your market or everything I needed to know about your customer base, I'm going to suggest your product and your customer base are probably pretty small and pretty simplistic. Hmm. Right?
Right.
So it's not a question of you trying to do a brain dump. It's a question of what can you shrink down from your expertise that is manageable for me to go away with. and manageable for me to accomplish that thing that you're promising I can accomplish.
Right. And the context here is more effective communication across the board, whatever the media. So whether you're giving a presentation, having a one-on-one conversation inside a meeting, or your written communication, right, you can think about how do I, if I need to write a report, how do I more effectively structure this? Or even emails, right? How many times have I got an email that has actually three different purposes in it, right? And emails are so much more effective when it asks me to do one thing.
Right.
Respond to one thing. Or structuring a meeting to have a better meeting format.
Absolutely. Or even creating groupings of product requirements. Hmm. Right. So now I've got a logical structure that allows me to say, this is why we're doing this set of requirements. Mm-hmm. Or this is how we can accomplish solving this business issue with the list of requirements. It doesn't change what my requirements are. It just gives me an easy way to talk about them. But yeah, the meeting, you know that the meeting thing is a bit of my soapbox.
I know you've been working on this lately. So do you want to talk about meeting?
Yeah. If you go online and you do a Google search on meetings and meeting effectiveness and how much time is wasted in meetings, you can just about do a search on any one of those phrases. You'll find multiple studies that show billions of dollars wasted in meeting time. That show north of 67% of the time in meetings is completely wasted. That north of 70%, 75% of audiences, I think one study I saw showed north of 90% of the people it reviewed said they think the bulk of meeting time is wasted time. There are formats out there to try and overcome that. Mm-hmm. The most popular one I seem to be running across is kind of this notion of what is the purpose, what is the process, and what is the product or the payoff at the end of a meeting. But I find that even that can leave you open for wasted time. Because I could say the purpose of a meeting is to discuss. Wow. The process by which we're going to discuss this is we're going to look at a market research and customer insights and customer requests for improvement. The product of the meeting will be, gosh, I don't know, right? And right. So you make something up. The product will be, we can make a decision on what's going into the next release. Mm-hmm. But realistically, you've been in that meeting, you never get there.
Right.
Right? So I'm starting to become a real proponent of this notion of you know, what we say in SCORE, it's only two. I'm either convincing, persuading, or I'm training. And I think meetings are all about training. We can accomplish. And you're going to train me how to accomplish. So it's not technically training, but it fits in that category. So we want to create an R&D. We're trying to decide if we should create an R&D group.
Okay.
Right? We can decide, because we want to, in this meeting, decide. We don't want to discuss the creation of an R&D group. We can discuss. That would be a horrible objective sentence. We can discuss creating an R&D group. How? By discussing.
What action do we want to take?
Yeah. So we can determine if we should create an R&D group by taking these three steps. Mm-hmm. Right? And so now the meeting agenda becomes those three steps. And there will be discussion. But I've already said that the end of the meeting is going to be a decision. Now, we may get to the end of the meeting and somebody may say, we don't have enough to make the decision. Mm-hmm. Well, then I'm going to go back in an email and persuade them now. So I'm going to switch tacks. I'm going to flip over to persuasion. If I believe firmly that we did get there, I'll persuade them in an email. But this notion of starting from a very clear objective with the meeting. This is the decision we will come out of. And stating that ahead of time, not saying we're going to discuss with the aim of getting to a decision,
right,
but saying we will decide. What is it going to take for us to decide? Now you're thinking about that agenda as entirely different. And when you start to lay out the agenda with the clear objective, the clear focus that we're going to come out of this meeting with a decision, you end up rewriting that several times. But the rationale that we talked about, those points that say we can decide by taking these steps, mm-hmm. those steps become the agenda for the meeting. And if anybody disagrees, and then you say at the end of the meeting, we will have a decision. Now that becomes your invitation. I'm inviting you to a meeting to decide whether or not we're going to create an R&D organization. Wow. You got to make sure that you deliver on your promise, right? Mm-hmm. So another conversation I recently had with a friend was that they want to look at creating a consulting brand. So if I make the promise, we can decide or we can create a consulting brand by taking these three steps. And steps is always kind of my easy keyword.
Sure.
We can create a consulting brand by taking these three steps in the meeting. I got to ask myself, can I really create a consulting brand in a meeting? And the answer is no. So my promise is faulty.
Right.
We can lay the groundwork for creating a consulting brand, maybe a better promise. We can decide if we should create a consulting brand, might be a better promise. Mm-hmm. But you can see how the steps and those are going to be different.
Right.
We can create a consulting brand. Boy, there are a lot of things I've got to do. I might have 10 steps to that. And hope that I create a consulting brand. But we can lay the foundation for, I might have three steps. I'm going to identify the market. I'm going to identify the competition. And I'm going to identify the participants on the team. Now I go away from that meeting set. I've just laid the groundwork for a consulting brand. And guess what? In the next meeting, the people we've determined are the team are going to come back and tell us what the market is. We can be effective by going after these two markets. Right. So it structures the next meeting as well. Sorry, you got me on my soapbox a little
bit.
This
is good. It puts a lot more teeth into meetings.
Right.
And everyone listening, we've all been in meetings that had no purpose to exist. Right. And we walk out of them going, okay, why are we better off now?
Even though somebody put a purpose on paper, right? The purpose is to discuss.
Right.
And that's my pet peeve. If you ever have a meeting with the purpose to discuss, please don't invite me. I'll discuss it with you at lunch or over the water cooler, but I don't want to go to a meeting to discuss.
Yeah.
If I'm looking at my phone in that meeting, I'm playing Angry Birds or something else.
Yeah, this whole topic of communication is one of those fundamental career skills, right? And having gone to the SCORE conference, I'm now disappointed that this was not part of the technical communications class I took as an engineering student in college, which happens to be was a more valuable course than I ever expected, right? Because as an engineer, turns out I was presenting a lot, and it was a good thing I had a class that gave me some skills. But I was really frustrated at this conference going, why did I hear this sooner, right? Why isn't this taught? Because it is a fundamental aspect of what we do as product managers and innovators is communicate. You know, across the functions in a company, up and down through our stakeholders and with our customers. So I appreciate you sharing some of your insights into SCORE. You've been doing this a long time. You've helped lots of executives and other teams improve their communication. For people to find out more about your work, how would you like them to contact you through LinkedIn or?
Yeah, there's a couple ways. You can get a hold of me through LinkedIn, Curtis O. Fletcher. I also have a blog. It's got cobwebs all over it now, but you can, that's an easy way to find me and catch me through there, curtisofletcher.com. And then if you want to find out more about the SCORE conference, scoreconference.tv is how you find out more about that. And the next conference is in May. I believe it's scheduled to be in Orlando. So if you want to attend that, or if you want to, you know, just reach out to me individually, there's two ways to go, right? I can do coaching individually, or we can get people through the conference as we did with you.
Very good. And I'll put all that information in the show notes. And Curtis, thanks for talking about communication.
My pleasure.
I so appreciate you listening. If you have feedback for making this podcast more valuable, please reach out to me on LinkedIn. Just search for Chad McAllister, PhD. You will find the show notes and details of the discussion at theeverydayinnovator.com/052. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.